0005. Control. They had exploded through and up out of that terrible corridor between the world and Area X into a lack of air that had shocked Control until the solid push of Ghost Bird's body against his, the weight of his backpack pulling him down, forced him to fight against the slapping pressure of what his burning eyes, strangled throat told him was salt water. He had managed to shut his mouth against his surprise, to ignore the rush of bubbles pushing up and around the top of his head, managed to clamp down on both his panic and his scream, to adjust as well to the ripping feel of 1,000 rough, smooth surfaces against him, too much like the door that had become a wall cutting through his fingers, slashing against his arms, his legs, sure he had materialized into the middle of a tornado of shining knives. Whitby and Lowry and Grace and his mother, the spy, the whole damned congregation of the Southern Reach calling out the word jump through those 1,000 silvery reflections, even as his lungs flooded with water, even as he struggled to lose the treacherous knapsack but still hold on to Whitby's document inside it, grappling, flailing for the pages, some of which exploded out into the water, the rest plummeting into the murk below with the knapsack, a slab of pulp, a soggy tombstone. Ghost Bird, he recognized, dimly, had already shot up and passed him, toward a kind of glistening yellow egg of a reflected halo that might, or might not, be the sun. While he was still sucking water among the converging circles of the many swirling knives that stared at him with flat, judgmental eyes, confused by the swirl of pages that floated above or below, that stuck to his clothes, that came apart in miniature whirlpools to join the vortex, for a fading second, he was peering at a line of text and suffocating while blunt snouts bumped up against his chest. Only when a true Leviathan appeared did his oxygen-starved brain understand that they had emerged into a roiling school of some kind of barracuda-like fish now being disrupted by a larger predator. There came an awful free-falling emptiness, the quickly closing space where the enormous shark had sped through the vortex, annihilating fish in a crimson cloud. A megalodon of a kind, Lowry in yet another form, the air trickling out of his mouth like a series of tiny lies about the world that had decided to extinguish him. Lowry left awful in its wake, so close to Control as he rose, and it descended, that the side of his face slid half raw against its gills. The frill and flutter sharper and harder than he could have imagined as it sculpted him, the expulsion of water a roaring, gushing piston in his ear, and the huge, yet strangely delicate eye away to his left staring into him. Then his stomach was banging into its body, his bruised waist smacked by a swipe of the tail, and his head was ringing, and he was drifting, and he couldn't keep his mouth from beginning to open, the dot of the sun smaller and smaller above him. "Pick up the gun, Control," said his grandfather. "Pick it up from under the seat, then jump." Did Lowry or anyone have a phrase that could save him? Consolidation of authority. There's no reward in the risk. Floating and floating. Paralysis is not a cogent analysis. Except it was, and from the wash and churn, the thrashing around him, a familiar hand grasped his drifting wrist and yanked him upward, so that he was not just a swirl of confused memory, a bruised body, a cipher, but apparently something worth saving, someone in the process of being saved. His feet had kicked out against nothing, like a hanging victim, while the fish again converged, his body buffeted by 100 smooth, rough snouts as he rose, as he blacked out amid the torrent of upward plunging bodies, the rough rebuke of continuous flesh that formed one wide maw from which he might or might not escape. Then they were on the shore, and Ghost Bird was kissing him, for some reason, kissing him with great, gulping kisses that bruised his lips and touching his chest, and when he opened his eyes and looked up into her face, making him turn onto his side. Water gushed, then dribbled from him, and he had propped himself up with both arms, staring down into the wet sand at the tiny bubbles of worm tunnels as the edge of the surf brushed against his hands and receded. Lying there on his side, he could see the lighthouse in the distance, but as if she could tell his intent, Ghostbird said, "We're not going there, we're going to the island." And just like that, he'd lost control. Now, on their fourth day in Area X, Control followed Ghostbird through the long grass, puzzled, confused, sick, tired, the nights so alive with insects it was hard to sleep against their roar and chitter. While in his thoughts, a vast, invisible blot had begun to form across the world outside of Area X, like water seeping from the bottom of a leaky glass. Worse still, the gravitational pull Ghostbird exerted over him, even as she was indifferent to him, even as they sometimes huddled together for warmth at night, the unexpected delicacy and delirium of that accidental touch. Yet her message to him, the moment he had crossed a kind of border and she'd moved away from him, had been unmistakable and absolute, so he'd retreated to thinking of himself as Control, from necessity, to try to regain some distance, some measure of the objective, to reimagine her in the interrogation room at the Southern Reach and him watching her from behind the one-way glass. "How can you be so cheerful?" he'd asked her, after she had noted their depleted food, water, in an energetic way, then pointed out a kind of sparrow she said was extinct in the wider world, an almost religious ecstasy animating her voice. "Because I'm alive," she'd replied, "because I'm walking through wilderness on a beautiful day." This, with a sideways glance, he took to mean that she wondered if he was holding up, one that made him realize that her goals might not be his, that they might converge only to diverge, and he had to be ready for that. Echoes of field assignments gone wrong, of his mother saying, "The operational damage from an event can linger in the mind like a ghost," while he wondered if even the more banal things she had said had a hidden meaning or agenda. Freedom could take you farther from what you sought, not closer. Something he was learning out here, beyond any standard intel, in a wilderness he didn't understand. About as prepared for Area X, he realized, as for Ghostbird. And perhaps that was, in the end, the same thing, because they existed alone, together, walked a trail that threaded its way between reed-choked lakes that could be tar-black or as green as the reflected trees that congregated in islands among the reeds. And he was finally free to ask her anything he wanted to. But he didn't, because it didn't really matter. So, instead, he shoved his hand into his jacket pocket from time to time, clenched his fist around his father's carving, taken from the mantel in the little house on the hill in Headley, the smooth lines of it, the way the grain of the wood under the paint threatened a splinter, soothed him. A carving of a cat, chosen to remind him of long-lost Chori, no doubt blissfully hunting rats among the bushes. So, instead, he dove, resentful at their pull, into re-examining over and over his rescued Whitby pages, the terroir pages, although they were more personal than that, an anchor, a bridge to his memory of the rest of the manuscript lost at sea. If he used those pages to talk to Ghostbird, it was in part to bring relief or distraction from the closeness of her and the way that the endless reeds, the fresh air, the blue sky all conspired to make the real world remote, unimportant, a dream, when it was the most important thing. Somewhere back there, his mother was fighting for her career at Central, that act synonymous with fighting against the encroachment of Area X. Somewhere, too, new fronts had opened up, Area X expanding in ways that might not even match its prior characteristics. How could he know? Planes might be falling from the skies. This non-mission, this following of his, already a failure. Quoting Whitby's report as he remembered it, paraphrasing, "Had they, in fact, passed judgment without a trial? decided there could be no treaty or negotiation? That might be closer to the truth. To a kind of truth, Ghost Bird replied. It was now early afternoon, and the sky had become a deeper blue with long, narrow clouds sliding across it. The marsh was alive with rustlings and birdsong. Condemned by an alien jury, Control said. Not likely. Indifference. He covers that too. Would that not be the final humbling of the human condition? That the trees and birds, the fox and the rabbit, the wolf and the deer, reach a point at which they do not even notice us as we are transformed. Another half-remembered phrasing, the real becoming half-real. But his father had never valued authenticity so much as boldness of expression. See that deer over there beyond the canal? She's definitely noticing us. Is she noticing us, or is she noticing us? Either scenario might have horrified his mother, the spy, who had never gotten along with nature. No one in his family had, not really. He couldn't remember any real outings into the woods, just fishing around lakes and sitting by fireplaces in cabins during the winter. Had he ever even been lost before? Pretend the former, since we can't do anything about the latter. Or this, Control said, or this. Or are we back in time, some creature or impulse from the past replenishing us as we grind to a halt? A stupid thing to say, Ghost Bird said, unable to resist the bait. Natural places are no different than human cities. The old exists next to the new. Invasive species integrate with or push out native species. The landscape you see around you is the same as seeing an old cathedral next to a skyscraper. You don't believe this crap, do you? He gave her what he hoped was a defiant expression, one that didn't hint at how he had begun to doubt Whitby, even as he continued to recite the gospel of Whitby. He had held back the quotes that might lead to something more substantial, so he could think on them a little longer, contaminate them with his own opinions. I'm trying to separate out the pointless from the useful. I'm trying to make some progress as we trudge on over to the island. Unable to avoid infusing the word island with venom, Grandpa Jack would have felt the same about the island, would be restless and pushing, for all the good it would have done against Ghost Bird. Did any expedition ever make it to the island? She asked, Control recognizing her attempt at deflection. If they did, nothing came back to the southern reach about it, he said. It wasn't a priority, perhaps too much else to wonder about. Why all the focus on the lighthouse, the topographical anomaly, and not the island? You'd have to ask the former director about that, or you'd have to ask Lowry. I never met Lowry, she said, as if this disproved his existence. Truth was, Lowry sounded unreal to Control when he said the name in this place, but Lowry also resisted being cast aside, disregarded, kept floating there at the edges of his vision like some majestic, demonic dust mote, manifesting every time he worried he might still be on a mission that had lodged so deep inside his skull he couldn't draw it out. Unknown commands, messages, imperatives, impulses that were not his own that could be activated by others. We think in terms of machines, not animals. The enemy doesn't acknowledge machines. He liked the word enemy. It crystallized and focused his attention more than Area X. Area X was just a phenomenon visited upon humanity like a weather event, but an enemy created intent and focus. She laughed at machines, not animals. It definitely understands and acknowledges machines. It understands them better than we do. She stopped to face him, to lend emphasis, and something like anger pulsed out from her. Have you not understood yet that whatever's causing this can manipulate the genome, works miracles of mimicry and biology, knows what to do with molecules and membranes, can peer through things, can surveil and then withdraw, that to it, A smartphone, say, is as basic as a flint arrowhead, that it's operating off of such refined and intricate senses that the tools we've bound ourselves with, the ways we record the universe, are probably evidence of our own primitive nature. Perhaps it doesn't even think that we have consciousness or free will, not in the ways it measures such things. If that's true, why does it pay us any attention at all? It probably extends to us the least attention possible. Is there something in the corner of your eye that you cannot get out? So we give up, we live on the island, make ourselves hats out of leaves, take bounty from the sea, build a house from the ribs of one of the leviathans from his dreams, listen to homemade dance music while drinking moonshine distilled from poisonous weeds, turn away from the real world because it doesn't exist anymore. Ignoring him, she said, a whale can injure another whale with its sonar. A whale can speak to another whale across 60 miles of ocean. A whale is as intelligent as we are, just in a way we can't quite measure or understand because we're these incredibly blunt instruments. That idea again. Or at least you are. Maybe she hadn't muttered that under her breath. He'd only imagined it. You sympathize with it, he said. You like it. A cheap shot that he couldn't help. Too often over the past 4 days, he had felt like he was crossing one of the dioramas from the Natural History Museum he'd loved so much. Intriguing, fascinating, but not quite real, or not quite real to him. Even if the effects had not yet manifested, he was being invaded, infected, remade. Was it his fate to become a moaning creature in the reeds and then food for worms? There was a lot about fakes in Whitby's notes, he said a little later, slyly, to test her, especially as her attention seemed elsewhere, always glued to the sky, to perhaps see just how dispassionate she could be about her own condition, with, he knew, just a sliver of payback in there, too, which he couldn't help, because it made no sense to go to the island. When she said nothing, he made up a quote, feeling guilty even as the words left his mouth. The sense in which the perfect fake becomes the thing it mimics, and this through some strange yet static process reveals some truth about the world, even as it can't, by definition, be original. Still no response. No? How about when you meet yourself and see a double that is you, would you feel sympathy, or would the impulse be to destroy the copy, to judge it, unreal, and to tear it down like any cardboard construct? Another fake, because Whitby hadn't discussed doubles, not once in the whole damn document. She stopped walking, faced him. As ever, he had trouble not looking away. Is that what you're afraid of, Control? She said it with no particular cruelty or passion. Because I could use hypnosis on you. You might be susceptible too, he said, wanting to warn her off, even as he knew there might come a time when he would need her to use hypnosis, just as she had in the tunnel leading into Area X. Take my hand, close your eyes. It had felt as if he were continually crawling out of the mouth of a vast inky black snake, that he could see a rasping sound from deep in its throat and from all sides, through the infinite dark bruise that encircled him. Leviathans stared in at him. I'm not. But you're the double, the copy, he said, pressing. Maybe the copy doesn't have the same defenses, and you still don't know why. This much she had told him. Test me, she said, a snarl from deep in her throat. She stopped, faced him, threw down her pack. Go ahead and test me. Say it. Say the words you think will destroy me. I don't want to destroy you, he said quietly, looking away. Are you sure? She said, coming very close. He could smell her sweat, see the rise of her shoulders, the half-curled left hand. Are you sure? She repeated. Why not inoculate me if you're unsure? You're already caught between wanting me and not being sure I'm all human, is that it? Made by the enemy, must be the enemy, but can't help yourself anyway. I helped you back at the Southern Reach, he said. Don't thank people for doing what they're supposed to. You told me that. He took a stumbling step back. I'm out here, Ghost Bird, traveling to a place I didn't want to go, having followed someone I'm not sure I know. A beacon to him still, and he resented that, didn't want it, couldn't help it. That's bullshit. You know exactly who I am, or you should have. You're afraid, just like me, she said, and he knew that he was. Had no defenses out here for anything. I don't think you're with the enemy, he said, enemy sounding harsh and unreasonable now. And I don't think of you as a copy, not really. Exasperation, even as she was relenting, or he thought she was. I am a copy, John, but not a perfect one. I'm not her. She's not me. Do you know what I'd say if I came face to face with her? What? I'd tell her, you made a lot of fucking mistakes. You made a lot of mistakes. And yet I love you. You're a mess and a revelation, but I can't be any of that. All I can do is work out things myself. And then, knowing her, she'd probably look at me funny and take a tissue sample from me. A roaring laughter came out of him at that. He banged his hand on his knee. You're right. You're probably right. She'd do exactly that. He sat on the ground while she remained where she was, stiff as a sentinel. I'm beyond my skill set out here. I'm totally fucked, even if we'd gone to the lighthouse. Totally fucked, she said, smiling. Strange, isn't it? A strange place to be. Being drawn out of himself, even though he didn't want to be. Suddenly calmer than he'd been since he'd gotten here, all of his failures muffled and indistinct behind another kind of border. She stared at him, appraising him. We should keep going, she said. But you can keep reading. She offered him a hand up. The strength of her grip as he got to his feet, a greater reassurance than any words. But it's a fucking disaster, he said. I'm reading you the last will and testament of a fool. What other entertainment do we have out here? True. Control hadn't told her about Whitby's strange room or his suspicions about Whitby as a conduit for Area X. He hadn't told her about those last desperate moments at the Southern Reach as the border shifted, and in not telling Ghost Bird these things, he had come to understand his mother's lies better. She had wanted to cover up the core of her decisions by hiding facts or watering them down, but she must have been wise enough to realize, no matter her motivations, no matter the labyrinth, every omission left some sign of its presence. How does it renew itself if not through our actions, our lives? Whitby asked, living on through control when the man himself was probably dead, or worse. But she wasn't listening. Something in the sky had caught her attention again, something he knew couldn't be storks, and he had the binoculars this time scrambled to find what she was staring at. When he found it, he adjusted the focus a few times, not sure he'd seen correctly. But he had. Across the deepening blue, high up, something drifted that resembled ripped and tattered streamers, long and wide and alien. Its progress so far up, so far away, Control thought of an invisible, shredded, plastic bag eviscerated to elongate and drift through the sky, except it was thicker than that and part of the sky, too. The texture of it. The way it existed and didn't exist made him recoil, made his hand twitch, become numb, skin cold, remembering a wall that was not a wall, a wall that had been breathing under his touch. Get down, Ghostbird said, and forced him to his knees beside her in a stand of reeds. He could feel the brightness in him now, tight, taut, pulling like it was his skin being pulled, drawn toward the sky that wasn't just the sky anymore, drawn to it so much that he would have gotten up if Ghostbird hadn't forced him down again. He lay there, grateful for her weight beside him, grateful he wasn't out here alone, stitching through the sky in a terrifying way, rippling, diving, rising again, and there came a terrible whispering that pierced not his ears, but all of him, as if small particles of something physical had shot through him. He cursed, frozen there, watching, afraid. The wavery lines that are there and not there. A line from Whitby's report he hadn't shared because he hadn't understood it. Images from the video of the first expedition coming back to him. "Stay still," Ghostbird whispered in his ear. "Stay still." She was sheltering his body with hers. She was trying to make it seem as if he wasn't there. He tried not even to breathe, to become so motionless that he was no longer alive. As it curled in and through the sky, he could hear it rippling, diving, rising again like traces of a sail until, as he risked a look, he saw some impact in the air freeze it in place, and for a moment it was stretched as taut as skin, almost brittle, unyielding. Then, with a final plunge and a scent coming far too close, the presence winked out of existence or slipped out of the air, and the sky was the same as before. He had no words for it, Whitby's or his own. This was no dead diorama. This was no beastly skeleton of a man he'd never known. Anything now seemed possible. Anything could happen. He clutched the carving of Chori tight, so tight he almost punctured his skin. They remained that way until a storm slipped across the sky, control now thought of as treacherous. And through the dark gray light there came lightning, thunder, and in amongst the raindrops that drenched them, dark, slippery, tadpole-like things hurtled down and disappeared into the soil all around them while they tried to take shelter as best they could, soaked under a gnarled, blackened copse of trees with leaves like daggers. The tadpole things were more like living rivulets about the size of his little finger. He could not help thinking of them as coming from the stitching in the sky, that somehow it had disintegrated into a million tiny pieces, and this, too, was somehow part of the ecosystem of Area X. "What do you think that will become?" he asked her. "Whatever everything else is becoming here," she said, and that was no answer at all. When the storm passed, the marsh came alive with birdsong and the gurgle of water in the canals, nothing at all amiss. Perhaps the reeds seemed more vibrant, the trees greener, but this was just the quality of the light from a sun that seemed as distant as the rest of the world. After a time, they stood. After a time, in silence, they continued on, walking closer together than before.